This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of the show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. 60 human rights and immigrant rights organizations in the U.S. have signed on to a letter to a United Nations panel asking the international body to shut down so-called family detention centers that house undocumented immigrants. Under President Obama, undocumented immigrants accused of the civil offense of being in the U.S. without papers have been increasingly imprisoned in a number of centers. In many cases, whole families, including very young children and newborns, are incarcerated. The physical and mental toll on these families, many of whom have escaped traumatic circumstances from their home countries, is quite severe. The UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention visited the U.S. earlier this month and in its report wrote, quote, "Mandatory detention of migrants, especially asylum seekers, is against international law standards." My guest is Erica Almiron. She is the executive director of Juntos, a Philadelphia-based grassroots organization. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So first, what exactly is the motivation of this UN panel, the UN panel on arbitrary detention? Is this something that, you know, goes around the world, the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, and holds other countries to standards of human rights, and now they have been here in the U.S. Applying those same standards to us?
Yes, so the working group was here for 2 weeks and they did a tour of the United States, and their job is essentially to come and take a look to see if the U.S. is abiding by human rights standards as it pertains to arbitrary detention. And within it, they did make note that family detention should be abolished and that we should return to our practice of when asylum seekers come into a port of entry that they be allowed to seek asylum and move forward without detention. And what we had done was actually to ask them to do something a little bit more urgent. And so the urgent appeal is essentially saying, that's great, we know that you are on our side, but we need you to do an intervention with international bodies faster and to hold the US government accountable for the human rights abuses that are happening here.
How do U.S. family detention centers violate international law, as far as you can understand it?
So the prolonged detention of families, one, it's the detainment of children, right? So we can start with that. So detaining children, and this has been debated back and forth. There's been arguments that there should never be an instance where you detain children, which is where I stand, and I think a lot of people stand. And I think there have been arguments that were actually fought by the U.S. to have it be that you can detain children in extreme circumstances. But we have had children now detained in the U.S. for over a year inside of the family detention centers. Some for over a year, definitely thousands more who have come through have been detained for months at a time. So we can start with that. I think the prolonged detention is another consideration with no sight of when these families are going to be released. There's nothing set to say when they will be free. And that also that detention cannot be used as deterrence, which is the U.S. has admitted that the use of detention has been ways to send messages across the globe that if they come into this country, that they will be detained.
Right. And this is a relatively new-ish phenomenon in the U.S. under President George W. Bush. There had been some family detention, then it was stopped, and then President Obama restarted it under his tenure after he first stopped it and then expanded it. And the only reason that one can infer is that there's some sort of sense that one, you know, that there's this attempt to discourage immigrants. But as you said, I believe it's Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security head, who essentially inferred that that maybe people might think, you know, or be less likely to enter the U.S. if they knew they were going to be imprisoned.
Yes, that's exactly what we've seen happening. And it, and not only in word, but in practice, I think the intention is to deter people. And this is what I think is important to realize. is that even that as a practice, it's an abuse of human rights, but it doesn't work. When people are fleeing or when they're coming to another country, they're looking for survival, right? So they're not looking at the news to say what's happening. They're saying, I need to get out of here and I'm gonna do whatever it is that I need to do to ensure the survival of me and my family.
And in fact, international aid organizations and human rights organizations have also been looking at what particularly, say, Central American migrants are escaping. Refugees really is what we should be calling them, given the violence in their homelands. There's a new report by Médecins Sans Frontières that will be released very soon. It was shared with a Guardian newspaper, and they described the very serious levels of trauma, mental trauma in particular, that people from countries like Honduras were fleeing, you know, murder and drug violence. Then they come to the U.S. Against all odds, facing tremendous dangers, and they find themselves imprisoned once more. Erica, last we had you on, we were talking about a hunger strike by mothers at the Berks Detention Center in Pennsylvania. What is currently happening in Berks? And this is one of the family detention centers that you refer to in your open letter to the UN panel.
Yes. So the moms inside of Berks have been staying strong. A lot of the women who were on hunger strike back in August are still detained. So they've reached well over a year. Some of them have been released, but not many. We had an incident a couple of weeks ago where one of the mothers that was on strike had actually been getting sick and passing out and vomiting and passed out after like several days of being sick, passed out and was finally taken to a hospital to find out that she had to have her gallbladder removed. And so she had emergency surgery, she had her gallbladder removed. And then she was returned back within 24 hours. And within those 24 hours, they had sent her to the detention center with documents that were showing all the things that she needed to do, the way you would get sent home from any hospital visit. And she had to have a special diet. She really shouldn't be walking around. She'd had major surgery. And they would not allow this woman to get a specific food for her diet delivered so she could recover. They would not deliver it to her room. She has two daughters inside who were taken off of school to care for her. And we also had a situation where her family had come to deliver the kind of food that she needed for her diet. And she was upstairs in her cell, and they wouldn't let her take the elevator to come down. And so then, therefore, she couldn't get the food that she needed for her diet. She couldn't see her family that had come to visit her, and she couldn't get into the cafeteria to eat the food. And so the food wasn't even the proper diet. And after several days of her lawyers fighting, they finally released her. But that is what people are up against inside of Berks.
Erica, how does the treatment by the U.S. government of migrants and refugees from across the border compare with, say, Europe's treatment of war refugees from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan? I mean, I don't expect you to know all the details, but we see the news covering the horrific conditions facing Syrian refugee kids. But we just don't see enough news coverage of how the U.S. is doing it to people fleeing comparable or circumstances, comparable, or similar kinds of violence. I mean, I'm sure there's huge differences between what's happening in Honduras and what's happening in Syria, but they're still fleeing violence. If somebody's family member has been murdered, it still feels just as horrifically tragic, whether you're a Syrian or a Honduran.
Right. I think that, you know, and I've seen the videos of how Syrian, and I think there's a lot you could probably say about how immigrants are treated in Europe. So I don't want to pretend like I fully understand. I have had family that have migrated to Europe. And so some of the treatment hasn't been the greatest. You know, we see that with immigrants here. But, you know, you see the videos of ways that like refugees have been welcomed and people are waiting at the airport. That is not the case here. And I think that there's a long sordid history between the way that the U.S. treats Latinos and Latin American immigrants that probably goes back hundreds of years that we need to be having a real conversation about. Like, we could really be talking about the root causes of some of these issues. But what is happening in Central America? Our families, women and children in particular, who are running for their lives, it is a result of US interventions in Latin America. That's not anything new. And it's been a result of 30, 40 years of US interventions. And that the elite in Latin America, in some of those countries, and the elite here have actually not given a crap or have not cared about poor families, neither here nor there.
So, what do you think this UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention can do? You have asked for some very specific things in this letter that your organization, Juntos, and 59 other organizations signed on to. What do you want them to do?
I think whatever is in their power, my understanding is that they can issue a statement. The working group is going to issue a report, but it may take several months for that report to come out. I know that the indigenous people in the Dakotas also issued an urgent appeal. That was super important to the movement work that they were doing there. And I think the international pressures do work. I've seen it work. I think that we're going to see a faster timeline with an urgent appeal, and the working group would then have to issue a set of questions that the US has to answer, and they have to answer them publicly. So I think it's a way to get the United States government to on record talk about why they think that family detention should continue. Or if
And
it should act.
right, and sadly, the United Nations doesn't have much power in the U within the U.S. to change much. Doesn't have much power globally to do much anymore these days. And one can have a whole nother story about why that is the case. So, is it more of a matter of sort of internationally holding the U.S. accountable, through these sort of symbolic gestures to kind of shame the U.S.? This is a liberal democratic administration doing this, not Donald Trump. Donald Trump may have this hateful rhetoric, but to somebody who's been imprisoned under the Obama administration, doesn't feel much better than the kind of language that Trump throws at people.
Right. I think that we have a tendency to be elitist in the US and to think that human rights abuses don't happen here inside of this country, and that when we talk about human rights abuses, people are referring to other countries. And there's a whole world out there. And to think that somehow we're immune to the judgment of other countries, I think is a little outlandish. And I think that what we need to start looking into is that this is a pure example of human rights abuses within our own borders that has to be addressed. And if the US government won't do it, then it is. We need to call them out, and we need to have other countries look and say, if this is what we're holding up as an ideal, then maybe we have it all wrong.
Erica, where can people find out more information, maybe even read the letter itself that you sent to the UN Working Group?
They can actually go on our website at www.vamosjuntos.org. The full letter is up. We have a recent post about it. And also, I think just to put out there, 2 weeks ago, ICE's own advisory commission also issued a 166-page report that basically says end family detention. And if you don't end family detention, here's 166 pages of recommendations of what you can do, which makes it nearly impossible to fix. And
Wow.
all of that information is on the website.
Wow. Well, thank you for that, Erica, and thanks for all the work you do.
Thank you. No, thank you for covering the issue. It's very important to us.
Erica Almiron is the executive director of Juntos. It's a Philadelphia-based grassroots organization. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.